Hi everybody, this is Terry Laundrie. We are starting the T3 observations for Sunday, December 13th, 2009, and I have a lot of things to talk about today. I've got a few questions that I have received, a few questions, and I want to give some directions to that. And I have some comments basically on the big chart, which is the 13 T's, which is our first chart, which I will then later refine into some shorter term considerations in the next chart, which is just the advanced decline T's blown up for the more detailed analysis. But basically, I'm talking about the breakout in the advanced decline line, which has been confirmed, but we'd like to see it next week, and it has its bullish implications for individual sectors, along with some other comments. I also have to comment on the changes I'm making over on the short-term analysis, which is done at the T-Theory Foundation site. I have moved the comments to the next morning rather than the evening because it's somewhat inconvenient and so forth, and I think just end up doing a better job on the short-term trends. But to jump ahead about all of these topics, I'm very much interested in, as you remember last week, I put the charts in with the gold tea and so forth, and thought that was a good area to look for a new theme in investments that's the way to take a theme for the new 8-year cycle, which has started out of the early 09 low. And I was talking with my friend Bob, who's done the analysis on gold for a lot longer than I have, and he said he thought that the mining stocks were going to become the leaders out of here as opposed to the gold metal. And I just passed that along because he probably knows more about that than I do. And then I wanted to throw in my own 2 cents worth, which is I think that the lithium is going to turn out to be another option for investment. It's an odd case that the gold tea is really a natural resource tea, and we've seen things like oil follow it along and so forth, but I think this time it's basically going to turn out to be the lithium. I don't know whether that's, I can't say that lithium is going to be the big thing that's going to go out of here, but I am kind of addressing that in this topic where we're looking for themes coming out of the 8-year cycle or nominal 8-year cycle. And I think that just strikes a resonant chord with me based on my experience in going through this long history of T's. And I'll provide you with a number of examples of that using a term which is, I'm a film buff, and there's a term used in films called a MacGuffin, which is spelled MacGuffen, and it's the sort of the interesting concept that drives a story but isn't necessarily real. It's sort of the source of the emotional part of stories. All great stories start with a MacGuffin, and that's the way people like Hitchcock and George Lucas and other people have patterned their life. And it just seems to me that is the way you look at the nominal eight-year cycle. That when you come out of that, there's this idea that captures people's attention and forms a high drama for the advance coming out. And so I wanted to take that as a tact, and it ends up with lithium, partly because I have a put a deposit down on the Tesla sedan, which is coming out in 2 years. They have a Roadster, which is very successful. It's very expensive, but it's very successful for the elite. And you know, they all use lithium ion batteries. The sedan will end up using 6,000 lithium ion batteries, the same ones that you're in laptop computers. And Nissan will be releasing the Leaf next year, which is a small hatchback, which probably uses less than that because the range is for the Roadster is 200 miles. For the sedan S that I'm looking at, is 300 miles if you pack it full of, as full of batteries as you can. And the Nissan, which is a 100 mile range, is basically probably some 2,000 or 3,000 lithium batteries. But in any case, lithium is only found in three countries, which are Detroit, Bolivia, Chile, and Argentina. And it bubbles up in the ground in some kind of a salt flat in some really horrible looking country in there. And it's the choice for batteries because it's the lightest element you can make an electrode for a battery. And you know, lead was the first one that's very heavy batteries. Then you went down to nickel, which is the next lightest. Lithium has an atomic number of 3, so it's the lightest one. And I think that it fits into the sequence of the gold tea, which is basically a mineral type bull market. But I think it's going to capture people's attention because it captured mine, basically. And I'm not sure they're going to buy the car because I have the deposit down. But in 2 years, it won't be available until the end of 2011. So you know, sit around and see how it goes. But in any case, so I'll center that around the concept of the MacGuffin as a point of a story that drums up attention. And that's the end point of the discussion, in addition to the fact the advanced crime line broke out. But I would first of all make the announcement that what I decided on the short-term picture was to put all of that into the calculations and indicators page as a separate thing. It's done. It was originally done daily after the market closed, but I found out that I had to wait for 2 hours for the data to come in, then made the chart, and then I was really involved in other things by the time that you know, that's sort of supper time around here, whether you're going to go out to supper or something like that. So I decided just post that by 8 o'clock the next morning, and then I decided that's the new schedule. I have it announced at the head of this, and then I decided to make the Saturday one as of noontime, where I'm going to do try to develop that into a full technical discussion for those people who are interested in all the ins and outs and all that stuff, and then I don't have to repeat that here. So this chart, which we have for the long term, is the basic chart, and then in the next one I'm just taking the stock charts and I'm amplifying the endpoint. I'm undergoing a program language change, and so I all the information to make the same thing that, you know, the last couple of years is available here, but I have other issues going on with that program development. So we're just going to use the stock charts, which is the second chart we're going to talk about today. But what's going to happen is that it's just going to turn out to be that the thing is bullish, and then the question comes up, so what do you buy? I get a question about what do you think about the dollar and the influence of the dollar on things, and the only thing I'd say is that the 13 T's that came out here had had no input from the fact that there's a dollar, had no impact for whether you were coming out of a recession or going into a recession. I mean, they pretty much come out with a time symmetries. The time symmetries are reasonably correct. I would point out there's a couple things in the chart. One of them is that the 13th T, if you look at where the crossbar of the T is, it's not up very high. We have confirmed that there's a breakout in the advanced decline line, but we haven't yet seen that fully develop, which we're supposed to see next week. But assuming that's true and the market averages go up, you have to know that's position, that T's vertical height is being positioned by equations which I wrote 10 years ago, and they're just set to set it over the maximum level in the time period of the right side of the T, and the right side of that T extends from the basically from March of this year to August 26th of next year. And so it'll just keep moving up as the market develops. That's because the T doesn't project a price rise. It just projects a time one. But for convenience on the chart, it just floats up. So if the market breaks up, you're just going to see that chart, that rise, that T just keeps rising up. The fact that incidentally, is always true for all the other T's that you see in the chart. So it is, for example, It's remarkable that the endpoint of the T always sits at a market high, but that's because the market high has already been seen in the time symmetry, which is a testament to the fact that T's actually are the important thing to look at. So I don't want to talk too much about the dollar because it's not my field, but I would say that, you know, the fact that you have this gold T that projects that gold is going up to the year 2020, you wouldn't think that the dollar could bounce, okay, because it's depressed. But you know, the talk that the dollar is going to go up could be coming from foreigners who would like to get it up so they can sell it. So you know that you'd have to be suspicious on that point that it was not a sustainable trend, and it's not the kind of thing that you're looking for is the major investment theme coming out of the 8-year cycle low from 2000, which is more or less to be an enduring trend that was going to grab people's attention and make them really excited about something. It's hard to believe that they get excited about the dollar. So I would say that the better way is to come at things the way I'm talking about, going into this MacGuffin business, and then I'm going to give you an example of one in the early part of the chart, and talk about these other things and how in my management company we kind of find out that it keeps showing up in Latin American funds, and we suspect that it has something to do with either Brazil, which is the largest, which is enormously gifted in the natural resources, or it has to do with the countries that are southern of that, going down to the Patagonia area in Argentina, which are just the natural resources of lithium, and you know, that's pretty much what the story is. Okay, so let's see. Let's get on with the story about the MacGuffin, which is a good way to tie everything together in a more imaginative way, I would say. If you're a movie buff and you are you know, really into how people develop movies and so forth, you can run across the term MacGuffin, which is the point that causes the story to develop, but it really doesn't have any meaning to it. If you're familiar with the story of the Maltese Falcon, which is one of the great stories from the film history going back, you have a story of some ordinary people that otherwise had nothing to explain. There was no basis for a story until they all got enraptured to this story about there was a Maltese Falcon encrusted in jewels and so forth. So you develop this high drama off the old thing. At the end of the story, nobody knows whether there ever was a Maltese Falcon. So you find out that it's sort of a myth that gave rise to the story, but you know, people are emotionally driven by myths, so it doesn't make any difference. In the land of make-believe, which the film industry is in, it's quite common to use the idea of the MacGuffin as the central point of, you need a MacGuffin to get the story going. And if it's not true, or there's a little bit of truth to it, but it turns out to be very true, it doesn't matter because it's an entertainment industry. Wall Street presents itself as being very down-to-earth, nuts and bolts, fundamentally oriented, but basically it turns out in the end, in order to make money, they have to tell stories, and at the central point of the story, there has to be a MacGuffin, which is a sort of thing that sparks people's greed or interest. And when you analyze the nominal 8-year cycle, you can take this as meaning that there is a speculative spark that starts at the bottom every about eight to 10 years, as I showed in the last chart, and it develops into the basis for a story, and it strikes people's imagination, draws in a lot of money is made, and then when the cycle turns down, the whole thing dies because it probably was a myth. And people are catching on to the fact that Wall Street is always selling myths, but they never change the way. They always just come up with a new one, and that's the secret of the film industry, is they always find a new MacGuffin. The most famous recent example of a MacGuffin announcement occurred about 2 years when George Lucas, who did the Star Wars series and the Indiana Jones, said that they had found a new MacGuffin for the fourth Indiana Jones movie. And you have to think about how this guy's mind works when he makes that kind of an announcement. If you look at his first picture, Raiders of the Lost Ark, the MacGuffin is the Ark. They discover this Ark in the movie. They discover this Ark. It has awesome powers. Big story develops. At the end, the Ark goes into a warehouse, and you never hear from it again. So the Ark was the source of the story. Historically, the rationalization for that as a MacGuffin, it was the thoughts that maybe in biblical times they had discovered the capacitor, electric capacitor, and they put it in an Ark. It's an insulator with some two metal conductors, and you store static electricity up. Maybe it gave off a little spark, and they were intrigued with the idea of electricity on a very small scale. So what they did in the movies, they just embellished it up to some gigantic laser machine, and so forth. In the second story, Temple of Doom, you've got the magic crystals that's supposed to do something. Then you've got the Holy Grail, the cup from the Last Supper, and then this announcement has to do with the crystal skull. In all that, in all parts of the story, the object it forms the basis of the story. But then, you know, the crystal skull goes off with the aliens and so forth. So, but the guy, George Lucas, and the other person that used the MacGuffin was Alfred Hitchcock. But George Lucas was making $100 billion off movies, and when he was looking for another movie to follow on from the first three Raiders, he didn't ask people to send them a script. He asked for, where is the new MacGuffin? Where is the thing that's going to become the focal point of the new idea that's going to mesmerize people and then get them to call them into come into the theater and give them all of this money? And it was the crystal skull. So you got to have, it's always mystical, magical, very rarely not true. My first, in retrospect, now going back at the early part of the chart, coming out of 74, you have this T that goes up into 1980. And we started our management program in the 78 time period. And the fund that we created there was the fund that we grabbed onto was Pennsylvania Mutual Fund, run by the first rate financial fundamental investor, Charles Royce, Chuck Royce. He runs the Royce funds now. And what we found out was in that time period, the big investment theme was in small undervalued companies that did not face the rising interest rates of the time period. Big companies were dead in the water, but when you found Pennsylvania Mutual Fund, you find out as it was coming out of that, by 76, 77, it was obvious that it was a standout. And then in the 8, 9, and 80 year, 78, 79, and 80, it was absolutely, could walk on water. It would go up on the up days, and when you pulled back, when it pulled back, it was invincible to the pullback. It was like nobody was selling anything like that. And it was because people had believed that there were companies that were very depressed. Stocks were all depressed at that time. But it was amazing that they could actually gain like that. And then one day, it was announced to us that the company had found their new stock, which was going to be so important to them that they were going to be able to continue to walk on water. And it was a small company, which I believe it was, they did sold electric trains or something like that. And everybody was so excited about this company because it had plenty of cash. It had never done anything. And it was very, very successful with its product. And it was going to be able to raise prices, which the big companies couldn't do. And they saw this thing was going to be glorious. And that was our MacGuffin. That's why we got involved in the fund. And we zeroed in right in for 3 years. And it was great. And we just kind of fell into the trap of believing that it had the magic formula, which was always going to lead to perpetual profits. But what happened is in 1980, the market went down to 82. And so from 74 to 82, you have the eight-year cycle. And when you came out of 82, it was all big stocks. It was all a big technology. It was also big financial because interest rates were dropping, and you didn't have to borrow. You could borrow money cheaply, and real estate was big at that time. And what happened is these small stock companies kind of just fell by the wayside, and it turned out that it was the true MacGuffin. It was the story that developed our interest in it and so forth, but it faded away and it was completely taken over by something else. difficulty in finding a new MacGuffin is that the big ones that came out of that low, which were technology, finance, and then indirectly it was real estate, because that was going on, but it wasn't a major part of the financial markets, although, you know, it got into its way. You went up to the 2000 dot-com revolution, and they blew out the technology. Great company like Cisco is still trying to climb out of that one. It was great in the dot-com revolution. It's a great company now, but it's got that problem that it's an old story. Okay, the financial and the real estate industries got together in a speculative excess and self-destructed, destroying each other. So you could block those two out. The only two we got is in the minerals area. So you're kind of looking around for something that's MacGuffin-like, which is a sexy story, and you're kind of looking around for what the story is going to be, and you have to probe pretty deep, and it just strikes me as being a kind of a situation where you got to see what's going on. And I would just say that I think that the electric car and the prospect for electric car, it's environmentally clean. You can fuel it up at night. You can fill up the electricity at night for wind power, because it's the environmentalist dream, is a potential story that could grow to it. And it's interesting from an investment standpoint, because the only three places that you can get the stuff are basically between Brazil down and going down into Argentina, into the Patagonia area. And if it takes off, the major problem is trying to find out where you invest, because I don't think that Chile, Bolivia, or Argentina have investments, and you have to be diversified to some extent. And it generally turns out to be a Latin American fund, but maybe. But you'd have to do your own research. I just offer that as an interesting story about what's going to happen, because when you a couple of years from now, you're going to be able to look back and say there was a MacGuffin. And if I, that's the one that made the money. And the big movie producers, the first thing they're trying to find is a MacGuffin. And right now, the Wall Street people know that the earnings are going to come out good, because companies are all lean. And so they're doing the fundamental work to find out the right stocks. But to sell it to the people, they've got to find the MacGuffin. They've got to find the story that's going to resonate with people and cause them to part with their money and get on some kind of a bandwagon thing that's got a germ of truth, but it's going to get carried to an excess. It can be carried to an excess before it self-destructs in the next bottom for the next 8-year cycle, or the 40-year cycle, whatever grabs them first. So anyway, so that just offers my thoughts on sort of the big picture stuff, and so we'll call that an end here, and then I'm going to go and talk about the next chart, which is short term, and I also have some comments you'll see at the in this chart relative to the correction at the coming out of the 74 low. I've got there's a normal correction there, and then coming out of the early 03 low, there's a normal correction there. I point that out, and then I point out in this big large chart here that there is no normal correction on that. So just remember that, and then I'll be back with the next chart in the next segment. Bye-bye.